What's up, heroes? Welcome to episode 19. Today I've got part two of my interview with Mike Allison, also known as Captain, a full-time DJ and producer based out of Lake Tahoe, Nevada. Captain was one of my fellow producers featured on the Say My Name Cypher with Producer Dojo. Under the name Mike Allison, he's got over 20 years of experience as a DJ and has performed alongside Skrillex, Vasky, DJ Rob Swift, and more. He's also been using Ableton since version 1. During this interview, we talk about his transition to a full-time career as a DJ and producer, the role of mentorship, his live streaming setup during the pandemic, how to identify legitimate marketing services for your music, how he sells merch online, and who you need to hire first.
A lot of artists don't think about that. Before you get a manager, before you get any of that, get a lawyer. You want to find a manager, talk to your lawyer. They're in the know.
But first, cue the intro music. So we've talked about sort of your background DJing and experience DJing. When did music producing come into the scene for you?
So I grew up playing instruments. I grew up playing the piano classically. I was in the high school band. I actually had an electronic music teacher in high school in the 90s that taught us about synthesizers and arrangement.
Wow.
Which is absolutely unheard of. And the fact that I got that, was kind of a blessing. But I've always kind of had producing on the horizon. It's always something I wanted to do, but didn't either have the time for it, the patience for it, the skill for it. There's plenty of excuses there, but I started writing music on trackers in the 90s. So before people were using, the modern DAW. And then I guess I wrote some music in Acid. I wrote music in Cubase back in the early 2000s and on hardware. We wrote some tracks on the Roland groove boxes, even with some friends. So it was always something I wanted to do. And, I had a couple of small successes. But I never really gave it my all until, just over a year ago, I guess.
Yeah, well, it seems like things have taken off for you. You've got 3,000 streams on the new Producer Dojo mixtape for the, including the I Am Captain track. And I was looking at your Spotify account. You've got 2,400 monthly listeners. That's pretty phenomenal for a year in.
I really had a boost going in, both with my experience DJing and my past experience attempting to produce. And also I had one big leg up, which was I had the money and the time to devote to it, which a lot of people don't have. And I recognize that. So I came out of one job and I had enough of a buffer where I could really spend all of my time devoted to this. Not to mention, I found the perfect mentorship program. It literally catapulted me from just my old knowledge of music to looking at things in a whole different way.
And which program is that?
Obviously, that's the Class of 808 with the Producer Dojo.
Awesome. Okay.
Yeah. That. Hands down, I probably oversell that to people. And I know most people aren't able to get into the programs now, but it really, if you listen to my music from before that to even the first track I released with just, whose feedback was that? I think it was Dustin or Matter, Hexus, and Spiderhound, I think, maybe even Mitch Brady. Yeah, so some early stuff that I'd worked on before that, or like even some of my first cookbook recipes, immediately the change is apparent.
Did you decide on Ableton because the dojo is very Ableton centric, or were you already using Ableton and that just happened to that led you to the dojo before?
So I actually had a buddy that worked for Ableton when Ableton was released, and I was actually one of the first Ableton artists. So I got Ableton, I think it was either Ableton 1 or 2, I forget. We were down at the Winter Music Conference in Miami, and a buddy of mine, Dave, worked for Ableton and said, "Hey, if you promote Ableton, we'll help you out with it." And so I got a discount. And so I've literally been working in Ableton since the beginning.
OG Ableton producer.
Yeah, I've got a lot of years Ableton experience technically. So the ins and outs in Ableton, I'm pretty good with. It was the musical stuff that took a little run. Yeah, before Ableton was Sony Acid, Cubase, and like I said, trackers. So Ableton, when it came on the scene, it changed the game. It really did.
Do you have favorite production trick in Ableton? Something you like to do on all your tracks?
I'm a big proponent of having the template because that's kind of one of my side gigs. And it's a side gig because of people I worked with. I like sitting down and having what I absolutely know I'm going to need in a track set up in advance so that I kind of get to skip those first 20, 30 minutes of trying to figure out, what I'm going to throw in the track, as well as, the 20, 30 minutes later where I go back and have to side chain everything and, drop clippers on everything and drop, create a drum bus. Like most of what I usually use is laid out in advance. So that shaves a lot of time off, and actually, I think has probably got me to finish more songs than I would have without it.
So set up a template.
Yeah, and realistically, it's making a template for yourself. I've seen Ill Gates' template, obviously. It was a big inspiration for me, as well as a lot of his racks and all the weekly download stuff. But for me, I like my template to, again, have the things specific to me. So you could go download a song template, and that's not really what I'm talking about. It's a guide that you're going to use, I guess.
The tools you like.
Right. It's like you're going through the forest. You can either have a path or not have a path. I'll take the path.
Yeah, one of the things that Dylan really talks a lot about is the 128 racks, setting up your sounds and using that to organize your sounds. And I was spending some time doing that, and then I stumbled across Loop Cloud. Have you ever used that to sort of sort your library?
I have. My library's too big for Loop Cloud to be of use. I don't want to tell you how big my libraries are, but I've got a half terabyte of Foley, if that says anything. Yeah. So
Okay.
I think I've got 25 terabytes of space on my computer. About half that's backup, and I'm running out of space again. I mean, I've been collecting sample packs and all that kind of stuff since 2000-ish.
Yeah.
And most of that's archived. Don't get me wrong. It's not like it shows up in the searches, but even still, I just e even the sounds I make are getting to be where I don't know where to put my own stuff. Like I'm like, I guess that one's time to get archived with the other old stuff. So, but for that, I do use Sononym. Something Baffometrics sold me on, which is
Okay.
it's like Loop Cloud, but it sorts your sounds using an AI like this, so you can get so sounds that are most relative to other sounds. So if you want like a crash, it'll pull up crashes, but not based on the name crash, it'll pull it up on the sound characteristics.
Interesting. I'll have to go check that out. So sononym, like synonym, but
Right, but Sonic, yeah.
okay.
So it's Sononym. I think it's about $100 or so.
Will it handle your 25 terabytes of Foley?
It does. It handles my ridiculous amounts of sounds, so
So now you can find 16 different samples of a waterfall.
honestly, these days I find myself doing more sound creation for my tracks than than I do pulling old sounds, unless they're, you know, like something tried and true, like, oh, I want a 909 kick. But now I'll start with like a dry 909 kick versus, you know, a processed one like I would have done before. So yeah, that's me. My sound libraries are getting less useful to me as time goes on somehow.
So talking about your template, if you were stuck on a desert island and could only have one plugin with you besides the Ableton stock plugins, what would that plugin be?
Oh God. What? As somebody who has a problem with plugins, plugin, God, I might have to go with Serum. There are just some sound design things I rely on it for. So I'm going to have to say Serum is my one instrument plugin.
Okay. We talked about, unfortunately, the, you know, how COVID-19 and the pandemic has really just tanked the live performance opportunities out there. And I've seen you've started off live streaming, and you've kind of, looks like you're dipping your toes in the water there. You've got some things posted on YouTube, and I think I saw in a comment you're using restream.io. Can you tell us about your live streaming setup and kind of tips for anybody getting started into live streaming?
Yeah. So I am using Streamlabs OBS as the program to live stream. And getting that set up has been, you know, mostly just getting the experience of working with it. I've got a couple of Logitech webcams that are, I've got one on my main monitor, and I've got one on a tripod over by my mix setup. I now have a giant like 12x7 foot green screen. Let's see, what else do I have set up? I've moved my mixer so that my entire audio production and playing setup is kind of a giant U now, as opposed to like it was all up against the wall in one big long line, and now I've curved it around me so I can kind of do the production stuff. See, what else do I have for my stream? I've got an Android tablet that nobody sees that sits under my monitor, and I run the Streamlabs Stream Deck. So it's like the physical Stream Deck, but on an old Android tablet. So I can control all of the scenes that way.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, I like you said, I run it through Restream.io, and that's so that it can stream through multiple platforms at once. I stream on Twitch, YouTube, Mixer, Facebook. I think there's one more. Oh yeah, Periscope.
Oh wow. Okay.
So when I'm streaming production, I usually only stream to Twitch and YouTube and Mixer, I think. So I've got those. And then if I'm DJing, I'll stream to all of them, knowing I'm going to get kicked off Facebook in 20 to 45 minutes.
Okay.
But the exposure I get from Facebook every time I stream to it is still worth it, even though it's a headache.
Huh. Okay. So you get kicked off, but is there any other penalty to your account, or you just lose the stream?
No, so far I've just lost the stream. I've only seen, you know, warnings. I know a couple of people who I think had issues when they just kept the stream going for too long, but I've got some other friends who are pretty prolific guys that do it to large audiences and just keep the stream going over and over again and haven't really had any big issues, I don't think.
How did you, so Restream.io, how many places can you sort of syndicate your feed to at once?
So it depends on your audience. I'm using the free stream still. I'm not paying for anything. I would like to bump myself up to the first tier so I can stream to my Facebook producer page as well as my personal page. But for now, I mean, Facebook kicks me off anyway, so I don't know that I want to put too much into it.
Why pay to get kicked off?
Yeah, but I mean, it honestly streams to a bunch of gamer centric stuff. So, you know, I think there's 20 platforms or something on the free one you can go up to, but you know, I think there's all kinds of niches. It's not just gaming, but the only ones that are really audio specific are the ones that I'm sending to.
Okay. So you picked ones that you felt like were audio centric. And then when you're streaming to multiple, it also handles your chat, doesn't it? So you can kind of manage your chat in a centralized fashion.
It almost manages your chat. It does a pretty good job. It has its own chat application and chat widget for OBS. So you can see most platforms. And the cool thing is it reposts those. Say somebody types something in YouTube, the people in Mixer will see it. Somebody types something in Mixer, the people in Periscope will see it.
Interesting.
The one exception, of course, and sadly this is a big one, is Facebook. Facebook changes their chat or live stream API so often that it breaks all the time. So most of the time I don't, to see Facebook, I like have to have a separate browser window open and constantly refresh it and kill the stream so I'm not losing bandwidth, because I don't have a lot of bandwidth where I live. So
I didn't hear you mention Twitch. Are you also streaming to Twitch?
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Twitch is my main. That's okay. That's like my biggest place that I stream. I say biggest. I've probably got more followers other places, but that's where I'm focusing my effort for live streaming. Just, you know, I've only been doing the live streams to Twitch for like 2 weeks or something, I think, maybe three. And YouTube, I kind of stick more for like tutorials, and I have a lot of unpublished stuff for like the people who buy my templates and stuff. So I still live stream to YouTube, but I know they're probably going to mute it or take it down after the stream is done. So Twitch is my focus for the live streams.
So I saw that you're also a little bit on Mixcloud, and they just launched a legal streaming platform where they've got licenses with a lot of the major music groups. And so theoretically there shouldn't be any takedowns on there, but I've read in DJ Digital Tech Tips that it's a little clunky right now. Have you thought about trying that?
I haven't. And that's just my personal experience with Mixcloud. I have been using Mixcloud since Mixcloud came out. And actually, if you go look at my other DJ profiles, I think I have somewhere in the neighborhood of 52 mixes up right now.
Okay.
On Mixcloud. So, the biggest thing I have with that is it costs to promote yourself or to even do the live stream on Mixcloud. And sadly, the target market for Mixcloud is kind of bedroom DJs. So you're paying to promote yourself to bedroom DJs. Like I haven't really ever gotten, I've interacted with a few big DJs on Mixcloud or as a result of Mixcloud, but never a promoter and rarely people who just like listening to mixes.
Interesting. Okay.
But that's my personal experience with it. Other people may have a different experience. And again, I'm not harping on Mixcloud. I love their platform. I think they need a better way to market themselves to non-DJs.
Okay. So you're on a lot of other social media platforms, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. One that struck me as interesting that I don't run into a lot of DJs that are using is LinkedIn. How important is LinkedIn to you, and have you seen a tangible benefit?
It's a little useful. If you're starting out, I wouldn't say it's hugely useful. But for me to go to a promoter and say, look, you know, a lot of promoters and a lot of, especially the corporate promoters are all on LinkedIn. So for me to go to them and then to see that I have, 20 something years experience in DJing, promoting, whatever, is beneficial, but I don't know that it's hugely beneficial, but it gives you a little credibility, I think.
Okay. Certainly more professional than most of our Twitter and Instagram accounts anyway.
Right. Absolutely. And I do have some connections on there across the country that are promoters that do use it pretty regularly. Mostly it's to work with labels, not so much DJs and producers, but it's there. It's another tool. And as long as it's something that I can use, I'm going to use it. So,
okay. As long as we're on the topic of social media, I was, you know, impressed that after, you know, a year of really going after production, you've got 2,400 monthly listeners on Spotify. What are you doing to promote your Spotify profile?
I pay marketers.
Okay.
Honestly, every release that I put out, I pay different marketers for different platforms. And again, most of that, you know, came from recommendations from senseis in the dojo and kind of how the larger labels promote themselves. So I'm trying to give myself enough exposure that I wouldn't, you know, that I would get from a label.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm treating it like a job.
No, that makes sense. You know, it's a type of advertising. I think the challenge that a lot of folks have is, you know, how do you determine what is a legitimate advertising effort and what is one of these scammy,
right.
You know, so much money for 10,000 streams or whatever. So how do you differentiate legit advertising and marketing from, you know, scammer?
Well, first off, anybody that promises you a number of plays is not really a scammer, but it's definitely a pay for play. So if somebody says, oh, we're going to give you 4,000 streams, 2,000 streams, whatever, for X number of dollars, that's not legit. Spotify might ding you for it. People are going to see that it's kind of weird. But my recommendation is, if you know anybody who does distribution, has their own label, ask them who they market through. And I mean, that's what I did. I went and I talked to some people at the dojo who are responsible for the releases, and they gave me, you know, some of the places that the dojo uses. I don't know if I'm supposed to share that, but that's how I found out. Before that, I was just trying to promote it manually, and I'm not a marketer, so I wasn't getting the results these guys get.
Yeah.
But I'm not spending a lot either. I'm sure I could probably spend more and get a bigger return on it. But at this point, I don't know. I don't see myself spending thousands of dollars on every release. I'm spending, I think, on I Am Captain, I think I spent a total of about $60 in marketing outside of my own efforts.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. You know, if you're going to take this seriously, you have to treat it like a business, and businesses don't survive without an advertising budget. So it doesn't make sense to spend thousands of dollars on plugins and hardware and synthesizers and not be willing to spend a little bit to market your music.
Absolutely. I'm kind of bummed that the coronavirus hit when it did. I was going to do a new round of headshots and promo shots. So I guess I'm going to have to wait on that. But really, you got to spend the money on the business. Yeah.
Do it with a mask.
Yeah, do it with a mask. No, I don't think that'll have, I don't know. I guess I could do the Gundam Captain mask.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with being a mask producer. Thank you very much.
Absolutely not. I never thought of myself as one.
So talking about the coronavirus and sort of revenue streams and businesses and everything, one of the things that impressed me was you've got a very professional website up, Captain Sounds, where you've got software and samples and all sorts of merch up. Talk to me about that effort and how you got into that and how you set it up, or did you hire somebody to set that up for you?
No. So my background outside of the music world is I was a computer developer for the other 20 years of my life. So I think I can write in like 23 languages proficiently or something like that. But needless to say, setting that up, you don't need developer knowledge. I've got my store set up on Shopify.
Okay.
I have my funnel set up on ClickFunnels. I have my donation-based software set up on Gumroad. I have my personal website set up on Bandzoogle. got my mail going through AWeber. Ah, goodness. I've got a whole list here, but...
And I thought you said you weren't a marketer.
Well, I've got to do some marketing, but Yeah, I'm not. I actually, the first chance I get, if I can find somebody to handle the marketing for that and think I can pay them, I probably will pay somebody to market my software.
Yeah.
That's probably going to be my first hire outside of a lawyer.
Probably a good choice.
A lot of artists don't think about that. Before you get a manager, before you get any of that, get a lawyer. You want to find a manager, talk to your lawyer. They're in the know.
Okay.
Anybody in the music industry producing music of any sort, your first hire should be a lawyer.
In particular, a music industry lawyer, right?
Yeah, absolutely. A music industry lawyer. And it doesn't have to be, you know, it could just be somebody new who's hungry for it. It doesn't have to be a big money spend or anything. But I don't know, this, I forget which book this came from that I read, but they said, you know, the most important thing you can do is get a lawyer, because they're in contact with everybody else you're going to need to get in contact with anyway. They're going to know who the good managers are. They're going to know who the good A&R guys are. You know, they have the in that nobody else in the industry has, and nobody thinks about them as the ones to have it.
I'd never thought of them as a networking opportunity, but that makes perfect sense, because everybody that's been around for a while has a lawyer. So, Mike, you've also got a membership section. Tell us about that and what you do for your members.
I do have a membership section. It's optional. I have an email list that I use as a lead generator, obviously, but I tend to give away Ableton racks or some kind of content. And then I'll take that email list and I'll give them more free Ableton racks or more free content. But part of that is an optional membership section. And that has a list of most of the stuff that I give away, as well as some resources, you know, like free VSTs that I use, or the VSTs that I think are must-haves, or, you know, links to, I don't know, where I find my software the cheapest, just all kinds of resources for producers. The whole thing's an offshoot from my Ultimate Ableton Templates, which is where I give everybody pretty much everything I know about music production and something I think that'll help them. I kind of put it in this vault, and the membership section is kind of a free overflow of that.
Awesome. I'll make sure I link that in the show notes. So when you're not editing your websites or producing music or looking for DJ gigs, obviously before the whole COVID-19 thing, what did you do to unwind?
I am a board sporter. I say snowboarder, but I also love the one wheel. But most of my time is doing something with music or riding a one wheel or a snowboard. I have a snowboard mountain literally in my backyard, and I have to look at it every day knowing that I can't go ride right now.
I assume the slopes are closed right now. Is that the issue?
Yeah. As soon as they deemed, you know, COVID the threat that it really was, they shut down pretty much every mountain across the country, as far as I know. I know there's some people that have been going out and, you know, hiking their way up the mountain or doing backcountry. But I don't have the gear or the money to buy the gear for that, sadly.
Yeah, you've got a good social distance when you're blasting down a mountain, but I guess those ski lifts are problematic.
Yeah, the ski lifts. And even if you're doing backcountry, you know, you've got to ride in the same car with people once you get to the bottom to get back to where you started. You've got to, say something happens, somebody has a fall, you know, you've got to get close to help them. So I don't know. I'm even really limiting the amount of like one wheeling I'm doing, because the last thing I want to do is hurt myself and put myself in a position where I'm taking somebody's hospital bed that they actually need.
I was interested when I was over on your YouTube channel. One of your most popular videos is a drum and bass remix of Clean Bandit's Mama track, and you did it with footage of you snowboarding.
Yep.
And you've got a lot of hits on that, but that was one of the few tracks where you've put some of your music to a snowboarding video. I was curious why you haven't done more of those.
Well, I haven't done more of those because I can't go snowboarding right now. I honestly would probably do more of them. Where we were this season snowboarding, there wasn't a lot of good snow days, and so I didn't have a lot of good footage.
Okay.
And I say I didn't have a lot of good footage. I probably have hundreds of gigabytes of footage. I just haven't gone back through it.
That's what I figured.
Yeah. But, and again, you know, it's kind of like audio production. You know, you look back, like I only really started snowboarding at any kind of decent level, you know, when I moved out here. So like a year and a half of snowboarding. So that early footage is not so great. You know, like I didn't know how to ride powder. I didn't know how to ride anything. And now all I want to do is ride powder and double blacks through the trees. you know, you say that, that video, which one, the mama video, that is actually one of my favorite places to snowboard. If I'm not mistaken, I think I shot that. It is a double black through the trees in Mott Canyon. And it's a phenomenal place to ride, and it's almost a stone's throw from where I'm sitting right now.
But you can't get there.
Nope, can't do it. As soon as the slopes open, I would expect more footage. I still want to find a better way to film it because I'm filming all of my own. And it's literally like I look like an anglerfish riding down the mountain with the camera attached, like on a rod hanging off the front of my head. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I should be still riding, but I'm not. It's sad.
Yeah. Well, it makes sense. Got to be careful right now, and we'll get back to it one day. I snowboard also and absolutely love it when I get a chance.
Oh, yeah.
So where can people find more about you online?
So the easiest way to find me anywhere is just look for Captain of Base. I've managed to score that username pretty much everywhere. So captainofbase.com, captainofbase at Gmail, Instagram, Facebook, just about anywhere. Yeah. So all of my artist stuff can be found at Captain of Base. All of my commercial stuff can be found at captainsounds.com.
Okay.
And that's all of my Ableton racks and templates and all that kind of stuff.
Well, fantastic. Thank you so, so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. It's been fun.
We covered a lot today, so here are my top takeaways. Before you go full-time, make sure you've got enough savings to cover at least 6 months of expenses and ensure you're part of a good mentorship program. If you struggle with a really large, disorganized sound library, consider Sononym. It uses AI to organize your library by similar sounds. For live streaming, he uses Streamlabs OBS software to set up the stream. He controls OBS using the SoundDeck app on a hidden Android tablet and features two Logitech webcams to allow him to change perspectives during the show. He has a giant green screen for a backdrop, which he replaces with graphics. Finally, he uses Restream.io to push his streams out to Twitch, YouTube, Mixer, Facebook, and Periscope. I'll have links to everything in the show notes. Once you've gotten established a little as a DJ and producer, consider setting up a LinkedIn profile. It's a good place to network with industry professionals. If you're serious about this, you've got to treat it like a business, which means you need to spend some money on marketing to compete with other artists on bigger labels. Be careful who you give money to, though. Ask people you respect for advice and avoid anyone who promises a certain number of plays. You don't need to be a developer to set up a professional-looking online store. He personally uses Shopify, ClickFunnels, Gumroad, Bandzoogle, and Aweber. Your first hire to your team should be a lawyer. Not only will they help to keep you out of trouble, but a music industry lawyer is also well-connected and can help you find other people for your team. Make sure to check out Captain's Sounds, that's two S's in the middle. Mike's got a members-only section, and there are dozens of Ableton racks, templates, and multiple gigabytes of audio samples available to his members. If you'd like a free sample, stop by offer.captainssounds.com to pick up 10 free Ableton effect racks. Also, please subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss the next episode, which will be 20. And if you enjoyed this, please share it with a friend and leave a review over on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening. This is the House Ninja, reminding you to be someone's hero today.